This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. You're tuned into Cruise Control, the only car show in the world. No, on BFM at least, anyway. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined on the show by Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello.
Hello, Richard.
And, of course, Mr. Arif Ruz. Say hello.
What's up?
We've got news coming for you on the show. We've got AT&T segment, which is talking about a Bosch parking app, and then a car review a little bit later on. It is the Honda Civic Type R. But, as usual, it is the man with the news, Mr. Arif Ruz. Arif, so what's all this about the SST confusion and has been cleared up?
So you know how last week the government announced that the SST was actually going to come into play?
Yes.
At 10%?
Yes.
But apparently there was some confusion about it. There were rumours and news reports that said cars would be exempt from SST. Did you hear anything about this?
Yes.
Well, I've kind of found it hard to believe anyway. This time the Customs Department has come out to clarify the announcement to say that the SST will actually apply to buyers. The exemption only applies to manufacturers of CKD vehicles. Daniel, do you have any thoughts?
CKD vehicles?
This is a little bit confusing because when they say CKD vehicles, they also have to think about when you local assemble a car, a lot of components are localized. Are those covered by SST? Then you also got engine and drivetrain components which are imported in. Will that be taxed? And what kind of tax they're going to put on that? So is it going to be double taxed? Because, for example, say the battery is supplied by Bosch. Okay? Bosch is a local supplier. They are a local company. The battery, for example, might come from their factory in Korea. So when they bring it into Malaysia, there's a small tax. And then again, when they supply it to the CKD plant, is there SST on that? So I'm trying to figure out where do they draw the line and how many times will SST be put on top of the item? I'm not clear on this right now.
Spoken like a true politician. Moving on.
Speaking of money and taxes, you know how we've been GST-free for about 2.5 months now,
have
right?
we? It doesn't feel like it. My wallet's still feeling as light as it was before.
Well, sales went up 50% for cars. Almost every passenger car.
New cars we're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. Almost every new passenger car, except for Produa, have recorded huge increases in sales.
Ooh,
I have no idea why Produa decreased in sales.
Does that man over there have any...
well, it's very simple because, you see, Produa has always been the default choice for the middle class and the lower middle class. Mm. But now, suddenly when SST...
They've got options.
Sorry, when GST has been moved out, suddenly Malaysians have got extra money.
Mm.
All those people who used to grumble about, oh, no money to buy an $80,000 car, I think I'll buy a Produa for $50,000. I will just have to make do. And then the price drops by only 8,000 ringgit or 9,000 ringgit. Suddenly, they got enough money to walk into a Japanese brand and buy a car. Now, I think Malaysians jumped the gun, thinking that after this car price is going to go back up, I have to buy a new car right now.
Now.
I will go into serious debt right now for the next 9 years, and I'll just work it out.
Okay. Yeah. Give us some increases then, sales figures.
In May, Lexus only sold 6 cars.
Okay.
June, however, they sold 196 cars.
That's a decent improvement.
Yeah. But for Toyota, in May, they sold about 1,500 cars. Last month, they sold almost 9,000 cars.
Wow.
And for Jaguar, last month, they sold none. Now 4.
Well, you're right then. People are thinking that 8,000 ringgit or whatever it is, it makes a big difference.
Exactly. So the guy who was going to buy the Perdua decided, I'll buy a Jaguar.
There you go. Or maybe he bought 4. You never know. All right. Sorry, next story. It's one of the big F1 guys who passed away. It's not only just
sad
an
news,
F1 guy.
Very sad news.
So Sergio Marchionne, if you don't know him, he was the boss of Fiat Chrysler Automobiles and Ferrari. He unfortunately passed away this week after some post-surgical complications. He's quite a big name in F1. You know, he's known for being very firm in negotiations with F1's FIA bosses. And at the end of 2017, you know, he negotiated budget caps and regulations and threatened to take Ferrari as well as the other teams out of F1.
This man was an icon.
Yeah, his contributions to the auto industry.
His contribution to the auto industry was immense. A lot of people don't know him in Malaysia because Fiat cars have disappeared from Malaysia. Chrysler, of course, have disappeared. And then Jeep is not very prominently important here. So he's had the brands that are not very common in this part of the world. Ferrari, yes. But everyone looks at Ferrari and doesn't think of Sergio. They think of other people.
Yeah.
But he's the man behind it. Sad to say, he's gone unexpectedly. And I think his loss will be felt in the company because he was a very relaxed boss at the same time being very stern with his employees. So I think people around him are definitely going to feel his loss. But I think business as usual, things will move ahead.
Turned the company into the eighth largest automaker then by volume, didn't he? Big changes. So who's going to be kind of replacing him then?
So there's this guy called Mike Manley. He's been in Chrysler and Daimler Benz in 2000. So he's got a lot of experience with the brand. So now he's being told to handle Fiat Chrysler automobiles, the whole big thing. And honestly, I can say it's probably going to be quite good.
Big boost to Phil, though.
Yeah.
All right. Story number three, Dieselgate 2.0. Is this still going on?
Yeah.
Are we not done with Dieselgate yet?
I mean, same thing I thought to myself. let's just, you know, forget about it.
Move on already.
I mean, this obviously, the story has not been quite that big over the past 5 years.
Right, okay.
It's been around since 2011.
Still lingering around like a bad smell, though.
But the corruption cases keep going. There are more scandals, more manufacturers getting involved. And if you don't know what the Dieselgate scandal is, it's basically car manufacturers using emission defeat devices to try and retune the car to get under the
emission level.
The emission level. Is that right, Daniel?
Yes, but you know, honestly, in this part of the world, who cares? You see the lorries and buses going past.
Yeah.
When you mention Dieselgate to the average Malaysian, they say, "What? Where's the gate?
Right.
I want to put on some diesel."
How cheap is
they
my diesel?
They are really not interested. Mm. It will not filter into anybody's mind in this country because why? People still want their diesel cars.
Yep.
And they're not bothered about emissions, because if they really were bothered about emissions, a lot of these old trucks and buses will no longer
be
on
the road.
Yes.
Mm. Well, for this Dieselgate scandal has basically drowned Volkswagen in a mountain of debt, you know, over $20 billion, and a bunch of their executives got arrested. But what makes this story interesting and why I brought it up is because they found a different way, well, not Volkswagen, but car manufacturers in Europe have found a different way to try and cheat their emissions.
Uh-oh.
So they're calling it the self-defeat devices, these Euro authorities, basically trying to worsen the car's emissions just before the future emission guidelines gets cut. After 2020, the year that the emission targets will be reviewed again, these car manufacturers want to raise that level so that they don't have to start building more economical cars, more efficient cars in 2021.
Right.
So they're trying to worsen things so that they can have it better for themselves after 2020.
Gotcha. Okay, moving on to story number four then, the Proton 1 tank adventure.
I'm going to hand this over to Daniel because, this is...
You're just like, I don't want this. Daniel, you take...
He wanted Dieselgate.
He wants Dieselgate.
I wanted Proton One Tank Challenge.
He wants exciting stuff, you get Proton.
Okay. Well, it is exciting because what Proton did was they called a whole bunch of people, key opinion leaders, media, club members, Proton club members, and they put three cars in play. Saga 1.3, the Persona 1.6, and the Iris 1.3. The whole objective is I put one tank of fuel inside, see how far you can go,
okay,
including brakes, meal, toilet, whatever else. It was a tough journey because, honestly, some of the figures that they got here was amazing. Now, I have to say this. Proton's objective was clearly this. I want to show Malaysians that my car can be economical and ride-hailing.
I see. Gotcha.
Of course, they won't tell you that. I'm telling you that. Because why? Everybody who wants to buy a new car for ride-hailing, they are using Perdua's.
Right.
That's why Perdua sales are really good, beyond being a really good car itself. But by having Proton do this, they're trying to say, listen, I've got cars that are economical. Please come and look at me also. And my cars are spacious. They're comfortable over a long journey. And drivers actually will enjoy driving it. So, yes, you got some pretty good consumption figures. I would say very impressive, in fact. But this was driven under duress.
Oh.
Because when you're in a competition to win something, you will drive slow, you'll put your aircon a bit lower, you'll be a bit more lethargic, you know, when picking up speed.
You don't have some guy in the back screaming, can you turn up the aircon, bro?
Exactly. So they got some pretty good figures. The figures are all on my website. You can go and look at them. They're all
there. DSF.my?
Yes. Thank you.
Welcome.
But I'm just saying, don't use these figures and then go back to Proton and say, hey, my car is spoiled because I'm not getting these figures. You have to drive a certain way to get these fantastic figures.
Take it as a pinch of salt then.
Yes, right, exactly.
Okay. I read the press release and then the thing that they kept highlighting was the fact that they'd be driving 640 kilometers on one tank, which, like, to me, I've never thought a Proton could go that far on a tank.
Did you see what the Tesla Model 3 did on one battery charge?
What was that?
Over 1,000 kilometers.
Mm.
Wow.
On a single charge.
The future is coming.
just saying, you know, the future is electric.
Yeah. Do you know, when I first bought my smartphone, it lasted me 2 days.
Yeah.
Now it lasted me two
exactly,
hours.
Exactly. Okay, so new cars for this week. You're looking at... Wait, hang on a minute. The police are getting a new car.
The police are getting a new car. It's a Mitsubishi Outlander, which Daniel reviewed.
Oh.
Did you? Remember
wait,
we
were arrested? What happened?
Yeah.
Is there a story behind this?
No, I think after I reviewed it, the police loved it. No, the funny thing is, I was just thinking about it. Police in Raja Malaysia used to have Mitsubishi Evo 10
right.
as their, you know, helang on the highways, their chase cars. And when's the last time you saw one of these cars on the road? I don't remember seeing it for the last 2 years, I think, or maybe 3 years.
Yeah, totally.
And when this information came out of how they just bought a whole bunch of new Outlanders, I started asking friends of mine, when's the last time you saw an Evo 10 on the road with the police colors on it? And all of them started guessing 2 years, 3 years, 2 years. Some of them even said 4 years. And then I said, yes, where have they gone? Are they in used car lots or are they sitting somewhere? Now, obviously, these cars have run their duty. Police needed new cruisers for the highway. Mm. So now they've gone for the Mitsubishi Outlander. But my question is this. Mitsubishi Outlander is a 7-seat SUV. Okay? Now, I'm not saying it's wrong for a police officer to drive a 7-seat SUV.
Maybe they're bigger police officers than they used to be.
But the third row seat will never be used. And, you know, police cars, when they travel, they have cones, they have all kinds of equipment which they carry. Right. So they'll probably use the big boot. If you put the third row seat down, you've got a huge boot, which we saw ourselves. If you're going to have that whole boot used up, the third row seat will never be used, which means you're paying for a car with equipment that you'll never use.
Good point.
So I'm thinking, why didn't they wait for the Proton Boyu, which is a five-seater SUV?
Five-seater, yeah. It's probably going to be more affordable as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, so that's off with the police cars. What else do we have?
So this week, Mercedes have been teasing quite a lot of the new S-Class Coupe and Cabrio. It's not going to be relevant to most Malaysians, but it is a pretty sweet car.
It's relevant to him because,
of course, he's got the money.
Exactly.
He's got the money.
The other thing is, Mercedes globally has revealed the Mercedes A-Class sedan, and I bring this up because... In that segment, Mercedes are going to have the CLA, which is basically a baby CLS, and then they're going to have the A-Class sedan, which is just an A-Class with a boot. So what exactly is the difference? And I'm thinking this car will actually probably come here because apparently Asians love these tiny little hatchback turn sedans, as seen by the Vios, which is a Yaris, and etc. So, but the next thing is, we've got the Mini Countryman, which has the slogan, our biggest Mini yet, showing that they're not shy about it. And you've got some figures about how big this new Mini is.
Yeah, it's funny because the Mini has grown in size.
See, I like the fact that it was a Mini. And now it's like we said last week, it's like it's a Maxi.
It's grown in size. And I'm thinking to myself, why is this car growing out of control? There must be a reason. I mean, it used to be 10 feet. Now it's 14.1 feet.
Wow.
Okay, that's 4.1 feet. That's almost the height of an average child, or, you know. So, I mean, growing is fine because everybody grows. I mean, you know, as we get older, we grow also, but sideways. But this is growing longer. So I'm thinking, you know, well, Mini, you got to get back to your roots. Like small, quick, nippy.
I think I'm okay with them being proud of it, you know.
Yes.
Like, if you're going to grow, grow.
Have you seen the Mini next to an average sedan? It's actually bigger.
Yeah, it's bigger.
It's bigger
it's
than
weird.
The average sedan.
Right. The last thing you mentioned was about the Jimny.
Yes, I'm very excited about this car.
What? Yeah, but we're not getting it, are we?
Well,
there's a chance.
I like this. Come on.
Three companies in Malaysia are pitching to Suzuki Japan to get the Suzuki franchise back in Malaysia, and they're going to bring in Suzuki cars which are assembled in India.
Can we name those three companies? Do we know them?
I cannot name the three companies.
Daniel!
But I can name the Swift will come in and the Jimny will
Swift.
Come in.
Swift. Sport?
Swift Sport, yes, of course.
Yes.
Right, that's all the news we have for this week. Thank you very much, Mr. Harry Farooz. Stick around, though. Don't go anywhere, folks. When we come back, we're doing our AT&T segment. You are, of course, listening to Cruise Control on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9 at the Business Station. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my and, of course, Mr. Arif Ruse, the boy with the news. We've started off our show today with a bit of news for you. We're going to move on now to our AT&T segment. It's all about the Bosch parking app.
Auto technology and tips brought to you by Volvo, made by Sweden.
Okay, first of all, Bosch arrived at CES 2018 with this new technology. What they're trying to do is they're trying to have an app where when you're driving around, instead of you just circling and circling and looking for a parking space, all you do is you just switch on the app. The app will tell you where's the nearest available parking spot. Great technology, because why? If, say, I go into the middle of Masjid India on a Saturday and there's no parking and I need to park and I don't want to be circling the area, immediately I switch on the app when I'm a few minutes away. The app will tell me if there's a parking spot or not and where is it, so I can hit straight away there, because it's also GPS located. Problem is the communication, because all this is done via internet.
Okay.
So how quick will the information be relayed to me?
My first question then, before you carry on, is how does it know where these parking spots are?
Okay, first of all, it has to take control of all the parking spots. They have to put sensors on all the parking spots.
Bosch will be doing that, or whoever they park.
I mean, you can put some kind of sensor. Right. Just like they have in mall car parks where you see a little...
The little light above. Light.
That beeping, something like that.
Never work.
Well, no, that would work. That could work. It could be an infrared signal, it could be Bluetooth, whatever. I don't know. I don't know the real technology behind it. But I'm trying to figure out, okay, if they do it in Malaysia, and now I'm driving along, I'm trying to get to Masjid India, I switch on my parking app, I said, okay, where's the nearest parking? And as I'm getting there, because the information is a bit slow, you know, 3G, 4G, 5G?
Yep.
Okay, somebody else also hooks onto that parking app, and he gets into the spot. By the time I reach there, he's just parked his car. Because I can't lock it.
Right, right. Oh, you can't lock it.
I can't lock it. So what happens is, when I get there, he's parking. Do I get out and start a fight with him because I switch on my parking app first? Mm. Or is it because he was closer? So this is one issue. Second issue is, a lot of Malaysians don't park properly. So if you don't park properly...
No comment.
So that parking lot will not be registered as an open parking lot. Because if their vehicle's nose is sticking into the next parking lot or their rear bumper, immediately that parking lot is not designated as an open parking lot.
Gotcha.
So I might drive past it without knowing that it's an open parking lot.
Mm.
Third issue, I'm thinking to myself, okay, I've got this parking lot app. It's working. It's fine. It's everything else. But what if I approach it and there's a lady standing there holding a handbag and saying, no, I'm waiting for my husband
Which
to go one round.
Which has happened multiple times. I've seen videos of this, and I've actually seen it in person at Wanathama.
Yes, I've actually experienced this in a shopping mall.
Yeah.
Now, do I shout at her and say I'm using the parking app, or will I allow her to shout back at me with a phone?
Mm.
Now, the thing is, we live in a society where we're not mature enough to accept this kind of technology. Mm. So I think this will only work in very mature markets. You know, Scandinavian countries, Germany, they'll be fine with all this. But I think our part of the world take a long time.
Arif, what do you think?
I just keep thinking about, you know, those motorbikes that park.
That's another thing, yes.
In between the lines.
Wherever
just
they
right
can.
On the lines. Then that's definitely not going to work here, I don't think.
Hmm.
Especially in Bangsa.
Especially in Bangsa.
Yeah, so I think this parking app might not really work at all.
I mean, there's been a few solutions thrown around here, hasn't there? Local companies have tried to develop software solutions for booking parking spaces within malls and one thing or another. I think Wanathama kind of tried to use this idea for a little while. Of course, it didn't work. You know, then you mentioned earlier on about the lights above the parking spaces, which is a great idea when it works.
Correct.
You know, and oftentimes you'll head towards that little green light and you'll get there and you'll see a car parked there.
Exactly.
Because it's not working right.
Yes.
You know? But you're right. I think there has to be a level of maturity within the market for something like this to work.
Yes.
And Malaysia doesn't have that yet.
Yeah. Not only Malaysia, I think the whole of Asia.
I mean, you know, when you see cars parked and the handbrake isn't on, so you can move the car out of the way. The first time I ever saw that, it blew my mind. You know, people, it's not even parked. What is it? I mean, what do you call that when it has the handbrake off? There must be a term for it, surely.
It's help the other man out.
Right. Yes. Just shove the car out. It's all right, mate. Just shove the car out of the way. Put your car there. All right. Interesting stuff, though. That was our AT&T segment, of course, here on Cruise Control. Stick around. We have a car review coming up for you in just a sec.
This segment was brought to you by Volvo. Inspiring technology, shaping tomorrow's mobility.
Car review then. Honda Civic Type R.
Type R. Very important. You
it's
must
a
mention
beautiful
Type
car.
R. Do you think so?
Yeah, I do.
I got to start. I don't like the looks.
You don't like the looks?
I don't like the looks.
I like that.
You see, it looks too much like a Transformer.
That's why I like it.
Ah, you're a Transformer lover.
I like the angles of it.
I don't like the sharp angles.
It's
I don't
very
like the
Japanese.
I don't like. Yeah, it's very Japanese.
Yeah.
The big spoiler and everything else. But then when I started dissecting it and started finding things that I didn't like about the looks, then I was reminded of the Mercedes A45 AMG, which also looks very similar with the spoiler, the big wing at the back, the sharp edges, everything else. Then I thought to myself, maybe this is all due to wind tunnel design.
Mm.
Because when you put something in the wind tunnel, designers' impressions are taken out of the context. What happens is the wind tunnel tells you how to flow the lines. So fine, I put design aside. I still got to drive the car. I was a little bit excited because Type R, after a long time, I'm getting into a Type R. The last time I got into a Type R was, I think, 12, 13 years ago. Got into this car and it just blew me away.
Mm.
I don't want to sound like a Honda Civic Type R salesman.
You're gushing. That's what's happening.
Yes, but
he's starting to gush. Yeah, my word.
It brought back memories.
Right.
You know, the gear shifter, that nice aluminium billet that you feel. The seats, they're so comfortable. Even though they're torso hugging, they're very, very nice. The dashboard, the way it flowed around you grip the steering wheel, all that is great. Visual excitement was inside the car, not outside the car for me. Start the car. The engine rumbles. Rumble, light, rumble. You know, you think to yourself, okay, is this going to get louder? And then you prod the accelerator and it's just... And then you think to yourself, how much is it? How much even before you drive it.
That's where I'm going with this.
I think I need to own this car. So I took it out for a drive. It's been a long time since I've taken out a test car and just driven and driven and driven and driven. I'm not just taken by this car. I'm just taken by everything about it. I took it out late at night, the first night, and I drove it until 1 a.m.
Oh, my God.
You know, I just kept... I didn't go far away. I was just driving around the city, finding open stretches of road. Every traffic light, if I could see someone next to me, I'll just accelerate like a boy racer. And then I realized after driving it that whole first day, and next day morning when I woke up and I said to myself, I have become a young boy racer.
Right.
This car makes me feel younger. This car... opens me up, you know? This car says, wake up, smell the roses. You're not a 50-year-old man. Enjoy life. Get yourself a Civic Type R. Now, you can get the same excitement from a Porsche, from a Lamborghini, from a Ferrari. But getting it from a Japanese 2-liter engine car, this is something really, I have to put short of amazing.
Mm.
And then you think about what the car delivers. Handling is superb. That rear stays tucked in no matter how much you try and really throw it. You have to really be silly with it or in the wet, of course. The 6-speed is so light. It's so easy to drive even in traffic. I took it out on the third day. I took it out to the center of town in heavy traffic. And my wife was telling me, why are you driving into heavy traffic? Have you got a meeting? I said, no, I just want to see how it works as a manual in heavy traffic. 55 minutes to get into KL City. I was not tired. I was actually... constantly excited. Because why? As I'm driving, people are snapping pictures. People are looking at me. People are smiling. Not at me, at the car. And then as I drove past a building near, you know Masjid Jame?
Yeah.
There's a glass building on your side right before a fast food center.
Mm.
And the glass building, you can see your reflection of the car with you in the car. And I put the window down and I waved to myself.
What color was the car?
White.
I thought it might be, yes.
I waved to myself and said, you know, you have arrived.
Right.
This is the car for you to drive to work every day.
So would this be something that you would, you know, you would actually consider buying then?
I would seriously consider buying this car.
This is interesting.
Because it's a 6-speed manual. It's a 4-seater. Because it's a hatchback, it's got a seriously large boot.
Mm.
You know, so I can actually put luggage and everything else in it. I can take my family out. The engine just keeps giving and giving and giving. The handling reminds me of old school roadsters, you know, mid-engine cars, things like that. And, you know, it's a Honda. It'll never break down.
Right.
When you think about a daily driver car, of course, especially if you want something about this, you always go for the Golf R.
Yes.
Where does the Golf R stand in this?
The Golf R... it's as exciting as this car. There's nothing short in terms of excitement, the Golf R. But the Golf R tends to be a little bit more clinical. It doesn't seem as raw as this car.
Mm.
This car tends to deliver, I think it's because of the manual gearbox. You know, the whole way, when you take a corner in this car, you actually feel the steering working with you. You actually feel the rear suspension. It's a whole new rear suspension system. And you can actually feel it at the back of your buttocks, you know? Am I allowed to say that on air?
You just did, yes, you are. Give me some of the specs of this thing then.
Okay, it's a 2-liter engine, turbocharged. So road tax is no issue. 310 brake horsepower, but it feels faster than that. 400 newton meters of torque. And this is the best part of the car. If you're cruising on a road, if you're doing about 100 kilometers and you're in fifth gear, drop to third and just slam the accelerator. And this torque will just bust open. This car will just rocket forward. And it doesn't feel out of breath at all.
Mm.
It just keeps going and going and going. 6-speed manual, like I said, very light clutch, very light on the gear change, so it's easy in traffic. 0 to 100 in 5.8 seconds. Doesn't sound fantastic. But, you know, if you're sitting next to a guy in a $1.1 million supercar and you're driving this $300,000 car, you might not be able to overtake him, but you'll be on his rear. And being on his rear will irritate the daylights out of him because he's driving a $1.1 million car and you're driving this $300,000 Japanese pocket rocket.
That's where we're about $300,000.
It's exactly $300,000. With GST. Without GST, it's $270,000.
All right. Let's do the 10-point inspection. You ready for this?
Okay.
Let's start off with question number one. Who's the car for?
For me.
For you? Okay. Good. Is it comfortable on Malaysian roads?
Fantastically comfortable, even though it's got ultra-low-profile tires and large wheels.
Fun to drive? Does it handle corners well?
Fantabulous.
All right. Is it economical?
Okay. If you drive it like an old man, like my age, it's reasonably economical.
Right.
But for a hot hatch, it is economical.
Is it got infotainment system? Is it good?
Do you think I really bothered with all this?
Just asking.
It's
know.
Got it, but I really didn't bother with it. I didn't bother at all. I never had the radio on.
You didn't have it on? You just listened to the engine?
I just listened to the engine. I just listened to the tires screeching when I went around corners fast. And I just listened to other people go, oh my God.
Is it well equipped? The USB ports, leather seats, all that kind of stuff?
No leather. You don't
just
need leather
bucket
in a car
seats.
Like this. Just right. Normal bucket seats.
Well built?
Very well built. You know, this car has taken its rounds on a few car park rallies. And, you know, other media have driven it. And they've all literally whacked it. Not a creak, not a groan, not a rattle.
Is it value for money, do you think?
Bang for your ringgit.
Would you recommend this car?
No.
Oh.
No. I wouldn't recommend it because you know why? If there's too many on the road, I won't feel special.
Oh, there we go.
I want to feel special. So I just want me and a few people to have it, and we'll all be very special.
Listen to that, Arif. That's Daniel gushing for a change about something. I thought it'd be something ridiculous like a Mercedes or a Porsche. No, it's a Honda Civic Type R.
Type R.
Right.
Because it reminds him of his youth.
That's it. Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Cruise Control, of course. My name is Rich Bradbury. On behalf of Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my and Arif Ruse, this has been Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to BFM.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.